Welcome to the Butts in the Seats podcast, special 24 anniversary special.
What?
Because this is the May 8th, 2000 WWE Nitro, this is releasing on May 8th. It just worked out that way. It's crazy.
Oh, happy 24-year anniversary to this episode.
I don't know if this is going to happen again, just based on the weird schedules and all that.
Wow. It's like an eclipse.
I'm Nick alongside Emily.
Hello.
Emily, how you doing today?
Better now. It was a rough day, and now I had a glass of wine, and now we're recording, and I feel better.
Yes, we were supposed to record yesterday, and then you realized, oh shit, brother, I gotta get out Patreon content.
Yeah, so there's a new episode out on Patreon. There is a couple of new WrestleMania recaps. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff over there for you. So if you do want to join, those recaps are available for you at the $2 tier and up, and the episodes are available at the $5 tier and up.
Yes, we had to do back-to-back impacts because they don't want you to watch Hogan Knows Best.
Turns out.
But we have it on DVD in hand. We have it now.
Unfortunately.
We have seasons 1, 2, and 3.
That's the unfortunate part. We have three
Emily,
seasons
there is
of this
a fourth
fucking show.
There is a fourth season.
I will not be spending money on that.
I don't know if we can find it anywhere.
We're like, not reviewing four seasons of Hogan Knows Best. We weren't even planning on reviewing more than one season of Hogan Knows Best, but now we have three.
We have until episode 200 of the main feed scheduled. We'll see about how long the Patreon.
Oh my God. If we do Hogan Knows Best part two, like season two, that's how you know we've run out of content. We are scraping that barrel.
So before we get into today's episode, it's been a little while. This is our first mainline episode we've recorded since the WrestleMania episode.
Which is bonkers.
Yeah.
Like, that was a month ago nearly. I mean, at the time this comes out, it was over a month ago. But we haven't sat down and done a main feed episode in like 3 weeks at this point.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So I did want to give you a little recap on some people that we may have said a very passing by to, or not even at all, but some people who are no longer appearing on the podcast just because like they're no longer with WCW, or they're hurt, or they're only appearing on Saturday night and stuff like that.
This is helpful for me because I have a goldfish brain.
I did actually discover that there are a few last appearances on this show.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, okay.
Interesting.
So number one, we have mentioned in the past, I don't think we did not give him a proper send-off. It is La Parca. We are done with La Parca. The men who do not excite your groin, El Dandy and Silver King.
Oh.
That was the last time we saw them, was that segment.
No. They really didn't excite anyone's groin.
They doubted El Dandy, and they were right to.
Oh,
they released
him. Then what is Stacy Keibler doing? Why is she here?
Emily, I know the payoff of the story, and you're gonna hate it. It's been a while, but I just felt the need to remind you that Scott Norton is no longer appearing on the show. Despite. But he's with us in spirit.
As soon as I learned who this man is, I haven't gotten a frame for it because the Dollar Tree was out, but I was gonna hang it up.
We mentioned it before, but I feel like you got faked out. Vincent is actually like, gone. No more matches at all on WCW.
Good. I didn't even miss him.
Yeah, I feel like everyone got over the fact that he passed away real quick.
He died recently, didn't he?
Yeah, oh. I'm saying it. Everyone kind of went, oh, for like 3 days, and then it was, all right.
Anyway, it's kind of, that's really sad. Like, he gave a lot of his life to this company and this business, and he got forgotten very quickly. That's really sad.
I think he did some decent harm to his legacy in, you know, when trying to make a buck off anything he could. Jerry Flynn, also gone.
Jerry Flynn. Oh, that's kind of a bummer. I like Jerry Flynn.
Do you? You've never said a good thing about Jerry Flynn other than quoting OSW.
I like being able to quote OSW.
Which is just saying his name. It's not even anything positive.
I like being able to quote OSW. It's fun for me.
Roddy Piper, I'm 99% sure we'll not see again.
That's kind of surprising, but not really.
Brad Armstrong, a.k.a. Buzzkill, he's gone.
Okay.
It was, remember he was Road Dogg's brother, so they gave him the knockoff Road Dogg gimmick.
Yeah.
And it was a hippie thing, but yeah, he's gone.
I remember. I don't recall. There's a difference in remembering and recalling.
I can't rule out an appearance for this next person, but they do not wrestle at all going forward, officially. Asia.
Really?
Yeah. Asia appeared in the Battle Royal, and that's her last match.
There was a point in this episode that she should have return and she didn't.
Yes. We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
Mike Rotunda, a.k.a. IRS.
Huh. Yeah. Wait. When was he on our roster?
He was part of the Varsity Club when Kevin Sullivan was booking, because that's his old group. Remember, they had Leia Meow and... It was Rick Steiner, Mike Rotunda, and Kevin Sullivan.
That was so long ago. I don't think I realized that was Mike Rotunda.
That wasn't that long ago either.
That was so long ago.
They teamed up with Jim Duggan and immediately turned on him in the same match.
Nick, that was like our wedding ago.
Less than a year.
That's so long ago.
And the man who I think inspired this list originally, the Maestro, he is gone.
That's kind of a bummer. I like the Maestro. Yeah. Is Melody gone?
Not her name.
What is her name?
Symphony.
Damn it.
Melody is Ariel's daughter in Little Mermaid 2.
It's a music thing. Whatever.
I just wanted you to know and listen to know where I know that name came from.
I love The Little Mermaid 2. Underrated sequel.
So with that, I think we can mostly get into the show. Admittedly, we ran through most of the backstage notes.
That's depressing.
In the Slamboree episode.
Yeah. That is a depressing lineup of people that we will no longer see again.
Depressing in that, like, you're sad, or depressing in like, wow, that's a nothing roster right there.
Well, both. I liked the Maestro's gimmick. I'm shocked that Asia's gone. We had no women anyway.
Yeah. And we basically still don't.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's a bummer. A couple of those people were a bummer.
So let's get into this episode. It is the May 8th, 2000 WWE Monday Nitro. Live from St. Louis, Missouri, in a stadium that's way too big for them. This is literally 10% full with a crowd of like 6,000.
It didn't actually feel that empty. I was expecting it to feel kind of like our TNA episodes. Plug on the Patreon. It was feeling a little bit... I was expecting it to feel a little bit more like that, but it didn't.
This is also like six times the audience of those shows. But
still.
They smartly... cut the arena in half. I actually used to work for a company that would do something kind of similar. They would have stuff kind of going on behind the scenes, which I guess technically they do too. But it's like, all right, we're not going to sell out this whole thing. Let's make this look a little more full while being smaller. That said, a year and a half ago, they drew 30,000 to this arena during a blizzard.
Say that number again?
30,000.
During a blizzard?
Yes.
And this got how many?
Like six.
WWF got that number, right?
No, WCW.
Oh, Jesus.
A year and a half ago.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's how quick it happened.
Wow, that's awful.
So we start with Slamboree, Nitro Stills. They are going so quick. They're like,
oh my God. Luckily, the pay-per-view was only last night. So hopefully you don't have a memory like I do and you kind of...
Well, you Emily,
and you kind of keep up.
Emily, 60,000 people bought that pay-per-view.
And you said that 40,000 of them were wrestling journalists.
Yes. By the way, this show did do a 2.8 rating. Last week did a 2.5, but Slamboree was okay-ish, so...
That's true. Yeah, I guess. Like, I don't think that would be enough for me to, like, cancel my...
Yeah.
I was going to say cancel my subscription, but it's the year 2000. That doesn't exist. I don't think that would be enough for me to fully stop watching.
And again, barely anyone bought pay-per-view, but it's like maybe they saw like, okay, Dave Rickett's not champion anymore. Let's go back to this.
Do you want to talk about what else we watched?
I think I want to wait until after the opening segment, but okay. I will say we did watch You Cannot Kill David Arquette.
I loved it.
Okay, yeah. We'll get into that after the first segment because I deliberately wanted to save it until we were kind of done with David Arquette. And after watching it, I'm like, holy shit, literally, this opening segment is in the documentary.
There could not have been a more perfect moment for us to switch over to You Cannot Kill David Arquette.
We literally watched it over dinner in the middle of the episode, too. So
yeah, it was perfect. Anyway.
We go from Nitro Stills to earlier today in the hospital. DDP is at Canyon's hospital bedside.
So like a good friend.
Yes, Canyon is selling the effects of being thrown off the cage through the ramp.
See... I see a hospital and I just think, I've seen this before. Where's Stone Cold with the bedpans?
Well, we'll get to bedpan later. Suddenly, Jeff Jarrett, Mike Awesome, Eric Bischoff, Kimberly, and Ernest Miller are here.
When did Ernest Miller join their team? I missed that chapter.
I mean, he's been part of the New Blood, but like not part of the inner circle.
I'm sorry. How the fuck is Ernest Miller part of the New Blood?
Emily,
I know
Jesus
this is an
Christ.
Old argument. I know, but like, come on.
I just, I just need you to accept that people be part of the New Blood. Look, it's not Ric Flair part
I
of the New Blood.
I just need you to accept that people get DQs.
They don't. That's the problem.
I need you to accept that rules aren't always rules, and we just need to let it go. But you don't let that go!
So, to reiterate your point, I am mad that set rules not being followed. You're upset that a loose name is not being adhered to your definition.
I am saying that we are both mad about trivial things, and both of our anger is warranted.
It's a trivial pursuit right here.
Do not degrade my anger from your anger. It's the same level, brother.
So they attack DDP. Kimberly pours a bedpan on DDP, which like they actually put like some sort of brown liquid in there. Like
I'm shocked they didn't make a DDP joke.
Did you think about that till now?
That was the first thing I thought of.
And then get the opening pyro. We then see the arena is like cut in half to hide. Like if you look, you can see the other like 40,000 seats, but they actually just managed to make it look decent.
Honestly, yeah, like it didn't feel half empty, which is like. We watch, like, I keep likening it to TNA, and I recognize that this is 6 times more people than TNA, but the TNA Impact Zone feels like how many people are in it. This doesn't feel like that.
Well, keep in mind, the rent for TNA is probably way cheaper than this.
Definitely. Yeah, they're losing so much money on this, I'm sure.
We then get Eric Bischoff, Jeff Jarrett, Mike Awesome, The Cat, Kimberly, and styling and profiling David Arquette coming out to the ring.
Hey, Nick, you know what that look made me think of?
Well, I mean, it's pretty yellow and blue, but what question did you have in mind?
My question was,
who's that Pokemon?
So, like I said, this is very yellow and blue.
It's there also fuzzy. I do want to, like, pet it.
Yeah, I think that did bring me to a first answer, but upon further inspection, I'm like, no, this makes more sense for somebody else. But what did you get?
My immediate thought, the reason that I started yelling, who's that Pokemon at the screen, immediately was Elekid. I recognize that he's in blue, but in the moment that I saw the outfit, I was like, that's Elekid. If Elekid had blue stripes.
If Elekid wasn't missing one of the main colors.
No, just you swap them out. If Elekid's black stripes were blue, that's Elekid.
So, are you going with Elekid, or do you have a better one?
I mean, my other thought, after, like, looking at a couple of pictures, there's a few pictures.
Are you actually looking at the colors of Pokemon?
You're going to disagree with everything that I have to say.
If there's yellow and blue, I'll hear it out.
Cyndaquil?
It's a little more beige.
I saw a picture with the colors of Cyndaquil pastelized, and I liked that.
See, all right, I'm going to weirdly give you this. Because Cyndaquil usually has the flames coming off the back. So if you combine last night's attire with tonight's attire, you get Cyndaquil. There you go.
Okay, I'll take that.
I was originally thinking Galvantula, but I did decide on Dedunsparce.
I think Dedunsparce is the answer.
Partially because, wow, that was kind of disappointing, wasn't it?
In terms of the evolution, yes. No, I really do think Dunsparce or Dedunsparce are the correct answer. I think you got it on nail on the head. I don't remember who your first
Galvantula. No, you looked at it and agreed at the time.
I need to like keep you in check with your Pokemon of like, no one knows what the fuck this is.
There's over 1,000 now.
What about Terry the Tangela?
I haven't even used Paradox Pokemon yet.
I think the answer is to Dunsparce. I think you're correct.
Like how you're like, it's Elekid, and then I get mine. Wait, no, you're right.
No, Dedunsparce is the answer. That was who popped in my head was Elekid that made me want to do who's that Pokemon. And I gotta go with that.
I will also weirdly just before we move on, note that Electabuzz is the exact same color scheme, and you're like, nah, Elekid.
I go with what pops in my head first. I don't do research. I just go on vibes. We have been
I'm
married.
Saying it's evolved form. The one that's actually Gen 1. The one more people know.
Nick, we have been dating for so long. And
so Eric Bischoff taunts the
and
crowd.
And you don't know that I just go
last
on
night
vibes?
One of the best swerves of all time. Did the Patreon teach you about this? You know what? We're going to review the Extreme Elimination Chamber, Emily. It's Bobby Lashley versus who?
Redacted.
No, he's not in that match.
No? Oh, no. Shit. I don't fucking know.
So anyway, Eric Bischoff taunts the crowd and calls last night one of the best swerves of all time. which prompts him to throw to a video package.
So he is pulling his best, like, Taylor Swift string theory moment here, where he's like, what if I told you none of it was accidental? What if I told you I'm a mastermind? Like, everything all came together so perfectly.
This is somehow a dumber version of that, Sting video package where, like, we should have seen it coming. Mm-hmm. Look at all the signs. Except this was like, yeah, we let DDP win the world title. Like, sorry, what?
This gave very Charlie Day and the cork board. Like, this was that
I got
vibe.
Talking about the mail.
Pepe!
Pepe Sylvia. A box is full of Pepe.
This was that vibe. That was the energy that Eric Bischoff brought into the ring.
Yeah, oh, and apparently Tank Abbott was throwing last week.
Apparently.
They're like, oh, Tank Abbott was totally in on it. Which I think was a little bit of them trying to salvage the fact that he lost David Arquette and is being built towards a feud with Goldberg. No, he didn't lose. He was in on it. So therefore, he's still strong.
For like Ghostberg. I'm sorry. I can't even say that without laughing anymore. Tank Abbott will never be taken seriously. To
but,
me,
like,
at least.
This is a worse master plan than it's me, Austin.
That's iconic.
Yeah, but it's still a shit master plan. Again, part of that plan is Austin wins the world title and is champion.
I think that's iconic. Like, you can't say that that was a bad plan. That was amazing.
Emily, you realize that everyone, like, ironically loves that.
I really love that.
I still don't see how that would have been Christopher Daniels. We talked this on TNA, but I'm like, how the fuck was that going to be the plan?
The way they did it was unbelievable. Chef's kiss, perfect. Could not have written it better myself.
So Eric Bischoff says, no one saw it coming. Even a baby could have worked it out.
So again, you're calling your audience stupid.
Eric Bischoff mocks internet fans. That's why we did it for internet fans. Shut the fuck up, Russo. I know who wrote this segment. It's you piece of shit.
So you're saying that Eric Bischoff will never come on our podcast? He hates the internet.
But, yeah, he shit-talks internet fans for complaining about Arquette winning the title. And then we get David Arquette's famous promo.
Shut up! I loved it. I thought it was amazing.
Do you want to give me his other big line?
You should know better than to trust someone from Hollywood!
Put a lot of stank on it.
Yeah, so did he.
He told DDP he had a dream.
Just imagine that whole line with his tongue out.
Yeah. Apparently, we told DDP his dream to be world champion. You know what DDP told him?
Shut up! The tongue.
Arquette thanks Bischoff for making him the heavyweight champion of the world.
I loved this. this was amazing.
This was so camp. That's the one.
So camp. Yeah. Yes, that's a great word for it.
And then Jeff Jarrett continues to feel like the fifth most important person in the room as the world champion.
You didn't even see him come to the ring.
Yeah. I was like, oh, they're going to bring out Jarrett separately. Cut to him on the fucking ropes. I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah. He's just here. Yeah, you're right. He's the fifth most important person in the ring.
Jarrett has the mic and I literally took no notes of what he said. I just realized.
Slap ass. No, I don't know.
Not even. That's later.
Slap nuts.
DDP arrives as Kimberly grabs a mic then and shit talks DDP. And this is all about me. 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 Like, you have fucking nothing.
DD me, right?
And then the moment that broke you is Mike Awesome grabbed the mic. You're like, no! Turn it off!
It's never
And even
a good
I kind
idea.
Of was like...
It is never a I'm good like, idea hit, to hit, give Mike Awesome
I'm
them.
Like, hit his music. Hit, just
Turn
bring out
mic
DDP.
Off. It's never a good idea to give Mike Awesome the mic. Never.
You know, he didn't do awful here. He had one line to kind of hit. It was like, you know, how does it feel knowing you're going to be taking care of Canyon for the next 50 years? And I'm like, oh, okay. You were leaning into, you paralyzed him. And
yeah. Okay, what a cool guy. He's a really cool guy.
Okay, so Canyon has been paralyzed. When is Canyon going to wrestle next?
A month.
Just over by like 4 days. But like, yeah, a month. That's it.
He's a miracle. Immediately healed.
He's pulling a China.
A miracle. Miracle child.
But DDP's music then hits and he comes out. Everyone bails except Mike Awesome. And I'm like, Okay, that's a little subtle way to put over the one guy of, like, everyone's a coward besides him.
I guess.
Then they all kind of come back as DDP hits a diamond cutter on David Arquette, and then DDP gets triple teamed. Sting's music then hits, and he appears in the ring to make the save. Buff Bagwell and Shane Douglas come out. Chronic then come out to help make the save. And that's the segment. My exact note is, what a mess. I'm really tired of writing that note for the beginning of segments.
We have written the words, what a mess, so many times.
Like, every opening segment is just like, that was a mess.
What a mess. Yes, I'm tired of it too. I agree. Why the fuck is Chronic here?
I don't know, man. Do you mean this segment or just on this show?
Yes.
Backstage, Mean Gene interviews that group of the New Blood. Bischoff says he's a little hot and scolds DDP for hitting a diamond cutter on David Arquette. Actually, Arquette's not in the segment.
No, he's not in this backstage segment.
Bischoff then books Awesome versus DDP in a stretcher match and also books Sting versus Jeff Jarrett. Gene asks, is the title going to be in the line? And Bischoff's like, yes, it will be. And Jarrett is not happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, valid. He just won it.
So considering he's not in the rest of the show, I think, yeah, let's talk about David Arquette and You Cannot Kill David Arquette, because he does have another random appearance or two going forward, but...
That was kind of it? That was the David Arquette run?
That's mostly it.
Wow.
He doesn't do, like, another match or anything.
All right.
His next match is in WWE.
So I do feel for this man.
2009, 2010?
I feel for him.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I feel badly for him, but I feel for him.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of the documentary as well, where, like... One, I think we both can agree, it's a work. The whole documentary is a work.
I was buying it for the first bit.
Yeah, it kind of jumps the shark on that front of the two moments that I'm like, okay, you're doing something here, are when his wife doesn't know that he's going to be wrestling again. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what did you think this documentary was about? And then when they go to visit DDP and they find him just that doing yoga in the middle of Mexico.
When they turned DDP into Yoda, then I was like, oh, we're not.
Yeah, this he is pretty not much
real.
Was, yeah.
This is not real. He might as well have been hovering, like using the force to like hover over the rocks of DDP yoga land. I don't know. Yeah, that was when I was like, this ain't real. This ain't it.
Yeah, so it just made me question how much of the rest of the documentary is real. I think the number one thing I laughed at, just start with the negatives before we get into the positives, is the big main event of the documentary is he's going to do a match with Ken Anderson, and they just pretend he won. I looked at the results like, no, you lost.
It was a really great moment, though, in the documentary.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful moment. It was a great way to end the documentary.
Except it doesn't, because then they go right into what would have been a better end of the documentary, which is him wrestling Jungle Boy, a.k.a. Jack Perry, who did or was friends with his dad. I'm like,
yeah.
That's a better end to this.
I don't know. It was a really well done documentary, real or not. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I guess I should say the ketamine.
Yeah, the ketamine scene. That was strange.
Also felt like some like very overacting or like fake drug addict.
I can't tell because like obviously I've never been on ketamine. I've never met anybody that's been on ketamine. I don't know. But it was a very strange scene where they like strapped David down with a doctor injecting him with ketamine to see how his brain were to react. It was very strange.
Yeah. But yeah, it is a good little like self journey up the ranks. I was saying I wish it had focused more on him actually doing the indies.
Oh yeah. My favorite part of this documentary is when he is down in Mexico. I think he's in Tijuana at this point, but he's with these like indie luchador wrestlers and they're doing quick matches at stoplights and intersections. I loved that.
Basically, how can you take a bump without landing
without
the concrete?
Taking a bump, yeah. That was such a good segment. I loved that to the point where I was like, let's go to Tijuana. Let's get stuck in traffic. I would die to be part of this. And then you realize that Tijuana is not a great place to go visit as a tourist. And as a young, white, blonde woman, probably don't go there. But, you know.
Yeah. And we got an RJ City sighting. He's a big part of this.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of RJ City
I love him. This did result in us just watching a couple AEWs afterwards.
There's a lot of AEW tie into this documentary.
Yeah.
Which is, like, unexpected.
That said, I of all the things we're saying, like, it felt a little, you know, it felt like a work. Him getting his neck sliced in GCW, I'm like, I think that's a shoot.
Yeah, that was...
Because I think it's a shoot because they don't linger on it. Mm-mm. They're like, no, let's just, trying to do a fun thing of like, he's on the rise now. And like, let's not focus on the fact that you almost just died.
But let's talk about how perfect the timing was of us watching this documentary versus the episode that we're watching.
Yeah.
So we stopped watching the episode just after that opening promo because it was, you know, we were making dinner. We didn't want to take notes. We didn't want to take notes while we were eating. My mom called. So we were just like, let's watch something else while we eat dinner. So Nick puts on this documentary. The opening scene to the documentary is the segment we just watched. Like, we just finished the segment they're talking about. Pivot to David Arquette 20 years later. I could not. It was so perfect.
He's like, I love this.
This was amazing. This was the perfect amount. Like, this is the perfect way to pivot into a documentary.
Like, you got a little enjoyment buff because of the timing.
The timing was unbelievably perfect. I could gush about this documentary for a while because it was really well done. It got some, like, backstage notes from his family of, like, how his family felt about all of it, including Courtney Cox and their teenage daughter they have together. Like, her dad's so embarrassing. Oh, yeah, she's like, this is so
lame. And
but then she's, like, into it.
Giving him the finger.
There's so many elements of this documentary that worked so well. And, yes, Eric Bischoff is part of it. And and Vince Russo is...
No.
Yeah, I thought he was.
No,
he was interviewed.
They used a kayfabe commentaries interview. He was not interviewed for this.
Sorry. Okay, Bischoff you're right. Was. They were both like in it though. Eric Bischoff is current day, whatever. But it didn't feel like a WCW documentary. It felt like David Arquette doing the indies and then finding his way back into the industry. It was a beautiful day. It was a beautiful documentary. Highly recommend
it. I did appreciate the clip they used of DDP. Of him basically going, okay, if you're a fan and they tell you you're going to win the world title, like, you're going to tell them no?
Yeah, of course. I can't blame David Arquette for winning what he won. It wasn't his choice. This is Russo and Bischoff's fault. This isn't David Arquette's fault. Why are we giving him all this anger and heat? He's just a fan that was given the opportunity of a lifetime. Of course you would say yes.
I'll close by saying, and they do in Beyond the Mat too, I'm a sucker for... a clip of people talking about the match they're going to do beforehand backstage, intercut with them doing it. It's such a great little thing.
Yes, that was a great scene. Love that.
I honestly,
such a good documentary.
And I kind of assumed they saw that be on the mat and went, oh, let's get that.
Such a good documentary. If you guys are interested in watching it, highly recommend. Like it was on Tubi for free.
Yeah.
So freaking good. Watch it.
But yeah, just watch it knowing it's a work.
It's a work, but it's a good work.
Yeah. But anyway, back to the episode. And speaking of your great joys in life, it's Norman Smiley backstage with who, Emily?
It's my boy. It's my boy, Ralphus. My perpetual MVP. I love him so much. I love him forever.
They have to beat Terry Funk tonight or their history.
Which would make you think that, like, of course they're going to win this match.
Spoilers.
Sorry. It'd make you think that, wouldn't it, though?
It's going to Terry Funk versus Norman Smiley and Ralphus. We do get another video package of Terry Funk just getting his ass kicked, and I'm like, I don't think this makes him look good. You need to show him then coming back. You're just like, look at this guy who just gets beat all the time.
I think they're trying to go for he's resilient.
Again, you need to show him winning, though.
Yeah, well, he's not winning.
Well, he is. He's still champion.
Yes, that's true.
Funk comes out, grabs a mic, tells Bischoff and Russo they'll never get the hardcore title off of him. Norman comes out, presents Monday Night Ralphus as his partner.
I love it.
Who is immediately hit with a chair by Funk. Like, just comes up the ramp, bonk.
I'm not mad. I love it so much. Monday Night Ralphus is iconic. I think that's great.
Better or worse than Monday Night Rollins?
Better. Way better.
Sorry, I just wanted you to shit talk your other boy.
I love Seth Rollins, but Monday Night Ralphus, even Seth Rollins would be like, yeah, no, that's better.
Except for the fact that you're referencing the other show.
That kind of makes it better.
Funk and Norman brawl into the crowd. They trade trash can shots and barricade shots. Norman drives off in a golf cart, like, backstage.
He just drives in a circle.
Makes a U-turn.
I'm not sure what his plan was.
I don't know. I was going to run him over.
No.
Terry Funk then hops on the back of it and they crash into some milk crates, which you said reminded you of WrestleMania 18.
It was very hurricane vaulting into the cardboard boxes.
More or less than that clip we saw of Kurt Angle and TNA just like swinging into the cage.
Oh. I think more because milk crates and cardboard boxes. I think that's more.
They trade baking sheet shots backstage still, and here comes Ralphus to accidentally hit Norman with a bunch of shots.
There's nothing accidental about what Ralphus does.
Well, Ralphus is meant to, like, the spot's meant to be he's winding up and hitting Norman behind him before he follows through to hit Terry Funk. However, he's only swinging hard to go backwards. And then he's like just casually like resetting forward.
I think he was unsure of how far back Norman would be, so he just like really wound it up.
By the way, half of Ralphus' ass is out. They're like, say no to crack.
Ooh.
Funk then hits a bunch of cookie sheet shots on both men and pins them. And so both men are apparently fired now.
They're not.
No,
there's no way.
They're on Thunder with the sign, "We'll wrestle for food."
Oh, good. Okay, good. Because, like,
no, we are not building that quick.
You cannot bring Ralphus back and then take him away from me that quickly. That'd just be cruel. Why would you do that? I would find a way to time travel and punch Vince Russo in the face.
They're around for the summer.
Good.
Thoughts on this match?
I mean, it was a bonker.
It was less fun than last night.
Yeah, it was missing Turf Mountain.
I think Rob was being revealed last night versus him just being here. It's like, there's an element of like, oh, okay, he's just here now. It wasn't like, holy shit, it's Ralphus.
No, and it was still fun. Like, I'm never going to be mad at seeing Ralphus. It was always fun, but yeah, you're right. It was a worse version of the Slamboree match.
So from that fun, commentary tries to pivot to Canyon's horrific injury. It's like, oh, just bring the mood down.
Yeah,
okay.
Seriously. Oh, you had fun? Fuck you.
They also chat about David Flair returning, and they're like, well, Vince Russo is basically David's dad now. Like, sorry, what?
Yeah, he's the father figure that David never had.
On Thunder, they were just going around New York City. And
just
by
like sightseeing?
By they, I mean, it's Russo, David Flair, Crowbar, and Daphne.
Aww, a little family outing.
And Daphne's just like in the middle of traffic, jumping around like, hey!
Imagine. That'd be great.
Let's go backstage. Technical difficulties plays over Rick telling Lex and Liz he has to do this himself.
What do you mean technical difficulties?
The mics were entirely fucked up for the first half of the segment.
Oh, yes. I mean, I feel like that's kind of a given at this point in Nitro. Like, there's going to be an audio issue at some point.
Back from commercial, Ric Flair comes out of the ring with the NWA title and a WCW title. Flair knows that he has history early in his career in the city and cuts his typical good tradition promo while shouting.
Oh, yeah, all of this is screaming. I think that's a given.
He calls out Jeff Jarrett for being champion, and commentary knows that it'll be Flair versus Jeff Jarrett at the Great American Bash. No, it won't.
What?
So Flair won the number one contender's Battle Royal on Thunder last week. So he won a title match at Great American Bash.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't get the title match there.
What?
Yep. But he does get the title shot beforehand, so I think that's why they don't
Okay. Still, though.
Spoiler alert, that might be one of the reasons why we're doing Thunder in a few weeks.
Oh, God.
Flair says that everything changed last night, but he wants to talk to David Flair face to face. So then we get David Flair, Daphne, and Vince Russo coming out. And Russo says that they're making tradition sucks shirts. And then just casually insults Missouri. Which they don't react to. They're not buying this.
Because we're not in Missouri.
We're in St. Louis. Here we are.
I thought that this didn't sell because they weren't in, because they were in Kansas City last week. They're not in Missouri this week.
No, they're in St. Louis.
My bad.
Also, Kansas City is in Missouri.
I know Kansas City's in Missouri.
This is not a Catching Kelsey where Miss Kansas is like, I have the hometown advantage.
I know Kansas City is in Missouri. I didn't think they did two shows in the same state in the same week.
But yeah, they just all still react to it because it's just shit cheap heat.
I mean, yeah.
Russo then says he has a list of people he spit in the face of last night, and I'm like, I guess it's just old-timey wrestlers? Like, it all seemed very tangentially related to what's going on.
I guess it was all NWA champions?
Yeah, I wasn't following his logic.
I think it was just because Flair had the title and was claiming tradition, and Russo was like, fuck you and your tradition. Fuck this guy, and also this guy. I don't think it was that deep.
Russo says David is sitting next to the father he never had. Rick then tries to reason with David, but David is mad at Rick. Rick says he wanted to do this in private, and then Russo's like, no, it's going to be you and David at the Great American Bash.
Nick, how did you even know that David was mad at Rick?
He said, I'm mad at you.
Yeah. There was no subtext. He says, I'm mad at you, Dad.
Emily,
like,
I
three
know writers
times.
Who use subtext, and they're all cowards.
If you had to even infer for a second what might be going on, they failed at what they were doing. They were writing.
Rick says he wants David to work hard and pay his dues. David just says he's mad again.
I'm mad at you.
And then Rick says, you know what? You want to do this? Fine. I'll call Vince McMahon. You'll have a job next Monday. The crowd erupts for this.
Like, yeah!
Which I'm like, are you just erupting at the mention of Vince McMahon? Or the fact that David Flair will be off television?
I think that they're erupting at the fact that these people who are hot on Nitro might be on Raw, the better show.
To be fair, it would only be David there. He's not hot on Nitro.
I think they're just popping at the idea of mentioning Raw because Nitro sucks and Raw is good.
What are you, Scott Steiner? David then joins Rick's side, but immediately blindsides him with the Statue of Liberty toy. Rick manages to get his watch back for like 4 seconds here, and then once he's knocked out, Russo takes it back.
Yeah, it doesn't get reclaimed for very long.
Russo says they'll see him at the Great American Bash. David Flair grabs the two title belts and Russo grabs the watch. So, yeah, I guess additionally why we're not going to do Jarrett and Flair at the Great American Bash. Rick has another match now. Why did you have him win?
What was the point? I think because he refused to lose, maybe?
No, he doesn't have creative control like that.
Well, I don't fucking know then.
You're telling me they didn't think out their booking.
Yes.
Backstage, Lex tries to motivate Rick, but Rick leaves and is like, I've had it, and like seemingly quits.
I kind of get him quitting, though.
Yeah.
And that makes sense.
Really confusingly, Lex Luger's music immediately hits, and we're like, what the f-?
So I guess he's coming to the ring.
Because he's in casual attire.
Mm-hmm. So maybe he's going to come to the ring and do a promo.
He's in picnic attire. It's not even street clothes, but he's in picnic attire.
Picnic attire? What is picnic attire?
I don't know. I can see him out on the barbecue and out in the park in this.
Okay. But yeah, so we hear his music hit and we're like, oh, so he's coming to the ring to talk about what just happened.
No.
Swerve!
It's Chuck Palumbo.
Who are you, Chuck Palumbo? You're nothing. You're fired.
By the way, it's what have you done lately, Chuck Palumbo?
I don't care.
He comes out with, what's it called? The fucking the muscle flexor. Or like the flexy thing.
The bar that bends. It makes you look strong.
So he does the whole Lex Luger entrance and like, he's in good shape, but he's not in Lex Luger shape.
No.
So this kind of just doesn't work.
And like, don't get me wrong, he looks great. He is very well, like,
oh yeah, he's
looks
in way
he looks
better
very
shape
fit.
Than us.
Of course. He's just not chiseled like, the way that Lex Luger is.
To borrow a phrase, he's not a genetic freak.
No. He's just like, Lex Luger has, I fear for what I'm going to say here.
The total package?
No. I was going to say, Lex has something else going on there. I don't know that it's natural, but it's going on.
So Palumbo grabs a mic and introduces himself. He is the main event.
6'5", 280 pounds, 3% body fat.
Main event, Chuck Palumbo. Stand aside, Jey Uso.
Jey is quaking.
He does not believe this promo he's doing. He challenges Lex Baby. He calls him Lex Baby like a couple times.
Oh, I love that.
No,
Lex Baby.
I've heard people do that. Come on, baby. We're going to fight, baby. That is you being nervous. That is you not knowing how to end a sentence. Mongo would do that. And fucking Kevin Green would do that.
Never mind that shit.
Like, yeah. Chuck Palumbo cannot talk
baby.
Either. Lex comes out, beats down Palumbo with mostly clotheslines. R&B security comes out.
What does R&B security stand for, Nick?
They're just really into rhythm and blues. They it's take
Russo,
Liz.
It's Russo and Bischoff, for those that don't know.
Lex attacks them, but then Palumbo hits him with the muscle flexor, which just leaves Lex laid out.
Those things aren't that heavy.
Also, I'm pretty sure he gets hit, like, the back.
They're, like, heavy, but they're not, like, knock you out heavy. They're just supposed to have tension, so
yeah.
You flex.
Security takes Liz away, and Palumbo just kind of walks off. Like, this is this, like, weeks, like, five, it feels like, of Liz getting away, and then all of a sudden, no.
I can't say it again. I'm not going to say it again.
You just don't, you're not into Liz.
I can't say it again. Because you're right, it's week, like, five of her doing the exact same angle, where she just gets, like, ushered away to the other side, and it's like, well, now we gotta go rescue. It's very Princess Peach. I'm like, you fucking got kidnapped again, you stupid bitch.
By the way, back from commercial, Lex Luger is getting stretchered off into an ambulance.
Why?
What the fuck was... What did you... How did you hit him?
What was that muscle flexor laced with?
Dude, I don't know. But, like, again, you hit him, like, kind of in the back, like...
Not enough to, like, kill him, but like, according to these stretchers,
the
yes.
Like, what the...
No. And it's this classic stretcher thing where he has to stay low to the ground, so the referees, like, push him off very awkwardly.
You're thinking a little bit of later, but...
I thought that was here, when Lex gets on the stretcher, and he just kind of, like, gets pushed backstage from low to the ground.
It definitely happens later. It might happen here. I don't
know. Oh, okay.
Backstage...
Right, because there's a stretcher match. Oh, my God.
Backstage, Russo tells everyone except Liz and Daphne to leave, and Russo says he's trying to help Liz, and then he tells her that she's going to wrestle, and both of us are like, okay, it's going to be Rhonda Singh.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, they do that match on Thunder.
So Rhonda Singh has not been released yet.
No.
Interesting.
I did not check for after Thunder, but does wrestle on Thunder.
Okay.
Because they do the same match. Or not the same match. They do the match we thought they were setting up.
Okay.
Russo says that Liz is going to wrestle this psycho bitch from hell, Daphne.
Daphne's like, whoa.
Yay. She just all smiles. Like, yes.
It's me. I'm the psycho bitch.
And if Liz wins, she's free.
She's not going to be free. It's Daphne.
So we have that match later because there are three advertised matches and we kept going like, fuck, we still have all three of those.
Yep, we sure do.
Our next match is Sean Stasiak, which I still cannot spell my notes properly, probably. He's facing Captain Hugh G. Rection.
Of course he is.
And Kurt Hennig comes out with Captain Rection.
Captain Rection. It kept auto-correcting in my notes to something completely different. So I was like, I don't know what's happening here.
So they're in St. Louis. Sean Stasiak cuts a local sports team promo. It's all about Mark McGwire, who would have, in 98, broken the single season home run record. He talks about he doesn't need a corked bat, which I'm like, I don't think Mark McGwire got caught with a corked
bat.
That
also just sounds like you're alluding to putting something on your penis.
Well, he starts by saying, like, I don't need anything extra, because there was a scandal with Mark McGwire a couple years before this, taking certain supplements, which were legal, okay, but sketchy. In hindsight, he was on steroids, by the way. We didn't know that at the time.
WCW can't say shit about steroids.
Weirdly enough, the person who Mark McGwire was going up against the home run race was Sammy Sosa, who years later actually got caught with a corked bat. So this is just a weird... It's just local sports team. Ah, fuck you, promo.
I don't know. It sounds like he's putting substances on his penis.
Dick jokes. Yeah, it was all about that.
Why are you putting cork on your penis, Sean?
Hello, ladies.
Ladies, I'm here. You're missing a lot of our inside jokes if you're not subscribed to our Patreon.
Yeah, that's how we're gatekeeping. This podcast is funnier if you pay money.
It's funnier if you give me $5. Give me your lunch money, punk.
You know, I think we need to pivot the branding of... Look, some people are into that kink.
Give me $50. I'll do whatever the hell you want.
Technically, yes.
Do whatever show you want, brother.
Oh, I mean, there is the Hogan nose breast.
No, absolutely not. I will not review porn. No.
So the match starts. Rection gets the advantage early. Hits a 10-punch spot. He's awfully stiff with those shots.
You can't go from Hogan nose breast to Rection.
Sorry. Hugh G. Rection hits some stiff shots.
Oh my God. I hate it.
Oh, I've been on to it. Who's here to watch the Hugh G. Rection but Ms. Hancock?
Oh my God.
Tell me Vince Russo wrote this show.
Did he write this podcast? Because, like...
But, like, she's still scouting. It's been, like, 2 months.
I feel like it's been longer than 2 months. What is she scouting for?
Again, you're going to be so mad. Stasiak hits a Hennig Plex and wins. Wait, what? Sorry, that's the end of the match.
That's it. Well, you were expecting a fully fleshed out match? That's funny.
Oh, yeah, because commentary implies that Hennig threw Stasiak out of the way of a Rection splash.
Oh, what?
Oh, God.
Oh, no. What is a Rection splash?
Which does carry over onto Thunder, where he kind of helps Sean Stasiak again. That said, Kurt Hennig is done after this appearance. We did say our goodbye to him on Slamboree, so listen to that episode if you want the proper goodbye for our final good old boy. So Stasiak gets the win, and then the MIA, who are fired, get in the ring. Why are you here?
Yeah, I forgot about them, honestly.
By the way, they're fired, but Lash LaRue will wrestle on Thunder and deem himself Corporal Cajun.
That's where he gets his name?
Yes.
Corporal Cajun.
Oh, he also does that, like, French version of Livin' La Vida Loca or whatever.
La C'est le bon temps brûlé?
Yes.
Good.
He hits that at the end of his promo afterwards.
Good, that's a great line.
The fact that he's not Lieutenant Loco is fucking bullshit. I will stand by this. I will go to my grave with the guy with the fucking 2L sideburns. Should have been Lieutenant Loco.
But it makes more sense for his character to be Captain Cajun.
I'm not saying you make Chavo Captain Cajun or Corporal Cajun.
We only had four names.
I think other people join. Because I think, okay, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure The Wall joins this as like AWOL.
I forgot that The Wall was even here, brother.
So the Misfits in Action are in the ring. Immediate Wolfpack music. Like, literally, one, two, three, Wolfpack. Nash comes out, beats down Sean Stasiak. We get a jackknife, and then Nash grabs a mic to call out Vince Russo.
You must have been smoking that chronic.
So, yeah, to attack me last night. What were you smoking? Nash says that Russo didn't kill him, so he has to face him tonight.
He has to kill him?
Yes.
Is this a murder pact?
Nash says he thought he and Russo were friends back from the WWF, but tells him to come out. And instead, we get the Filthy Animals music.
Nice. Way happier with that.
It's Kidman, Ray, Conan, and Tori. And commentary's like, oh, wow, Kidman's back with them.
Good. I associated Billy Kidman with them on Slamboree. Like, they're all Filthy Animals. They're the filthiest animals in my heart.
But, you know, it is nice to see that group kind of all back together.
Yeah. Very happy. I love the Filthy Animals.
Kidman tells Nash to learn his place and tells Nash he's the low man on the scrotum pole.
Got him.
Conan says, screw the wolf pack. It says that Nash is going to toss their salad and peel their potatoes.
What does that mean?
Eat their ass and something with their penis?
I just don't know how to read Conan. If you want to be gay with Kevin Nash, that's great. Proud of you. But, like, why are you saying it like that?
Like, the way
it feels like you have a vegetable fetish.
His promos are the way that, like, Andrew Tate's Twitter just got taken over by the social media manager who didn't pay. Like, God, you know the gayest thing is having sex with a woman.
Oh, my, wait, is that happen? Did that happen? Is that real?
He didn't pay a social media manager, so they tweeted a bunch of, like, having sex with a man is one of those masculine things. I think it might be down now.
Nothing is ever down forever, brother.
So the Filthy Animals attack Nash, so Hulk Hogan comes out to make the save. Nash grabs a mic, challenges his little bitches to a tag team street fight. Hogan then says, we're going to go take a Russo and wipe our Bischoffs. Whoa. And then we'll beat the shit out of you. Like, wait, what?
Take a Russo and beat their Bischoffs. Like, that's
no,
funny.
Wipe their
Bischoffs. Oh, wipe their Bischoffs, sorry. That's good wordplay.
No, it's not.
I like it.
It's not good wordplay.
I like it. If I like it, then it's good.
So we had a match here. Doesn't matter. Like, quick, Emily, who won that match? Was it Sean Stasiak or Captain Huge Erection?
Nick, I literally have a note that says, I just can't do this anymore. I don't know. I don't care. I can't fucking do this.
So we're happy to announce the next episode is going to be the ECW show.
Thank God.
Backstage, GDP is rolling a stretcher. Back in commercial, Eric Bischoff and Kimberly come out to join commentary for great. Mike Awesome versus DDP in a stretcher match.
Cool. Tony, Mike Awesome does come out to the Revolution music. Like, confirmed for sure this time.
He's been doing it for like
I thought it was like we were questionable about it the last time.
Oh, no. I've known it's Revolution music every time. Just sometimes he comes out to a different song.
Okay.
Or like, he'll come out to the Revolution music and then he'll win and a different song will play. Yeah. And I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Well,
so when DDP is coming out, Tony Schiavone tries to give this match some story context and
God
build
bless
a
Tony.
Do some world building. Eric Bischoff, shut up. No one cares.
I need to care, Eric. I have to have something to cling on to here, man. I don't got a lot.
Awesome carries the stretcher to ringside.
I'm being held against my will to watch this fucking show. Give me something.
DDP attacks Awesome, getting in the ring, and then hits a discus clothesline, and they spill to the floor. DDP throws Awesome around DDP and Kimberly, and Awesome gains the advantage, but DDP manages to hit a uranage. We get some miscommunication, including a head scissors. Like, oh, don't know what happened there. DDP hits a DDT, and then Kimberly just grabs the divorce papers and goes up to the apron like, sign them!
Right now! Distraction. This is legally binding.
DDP rips up the papers, but Awesome hits two chair shots and then a DDT on the chair. Awesome starts to bring the stretcher into the ring, and I think realizes, wait, fuck, how would this even work?
Yeah, valid. Because he does try to get it through the ropes.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's how you win, right? No, fuck, shit, okay.
We get another DDT on the chair, which busts DDP open. Awesome then puts DDP on the stretcher, and, like, we just cut away, and DDP gets off. Like
he gets off, brother.
Like, stands up.
I know.
Sorry, no, the last match was the sex jokes match.
Sorry, my bad.
Because, yeah, it's like, okay, cool, Mike Awesome's going to win. Oh, wait, sorry, he didn't. Like, what?
Just kidding.
Bischoff gives Awesome a table, who sets it up in the ring. Paige ducks a chair shot, but eats a second attempt. Then get the Awesome Bomb through the table, and Eric Bischoff comes in with the divorce papers, and they take DDP's hand and, like, makes him sign it while he's passed out. And they're like, yeah, this totally counts.
At least he didn't eat the divorce papers.
Shut the fuck up. No one got the reference. No one tweeted in.
I ate the divorce papers.
DDP then gets put on the stretcher, and we get the same finish we got for a different stretcher match once, which is like, it's super low, and the refs just like
push him
the way up the ramp.
I thought this happened earlier, too. Whatever.
Which is just not how stretcher matches work. You have to push your opponent. That's part of the challenge.
Oh, okay. Not in this company.
Not WWE, no.
Fuck you. So, but like, stretchers can lift. You can lift it up.
So Mike Awesome wins.
I guess.
I mean, yeah, he won the stretcher match. Like, that's how you win a stretcher match, by it crosses a certain point. I thought this match was decent. I thought the story got in the way of this match.
What story?
The divorce papers and having to sign the thing. And
that story had nothing to do with Mike Awesome.
I don't know. I thought this was okay.
I thought it was... You just have a soft spot for DDP is the problem.
And Mike Awesome.
Yeah. You love both of these men.
They put on a good...
You shill...
Who's paying me? I can't stretch and the other one's dead.
I can't stretch.
Is that your favorite line of the podcast?
I can't stretch and the other one's dead.
Look, in terms of in-ring action, this was good. It was fine.
Fine.
Fine. No, I think without the Kimberly shit, I think this would have been better.
Kimberly is doing too much these days. I used to love Kimberly, and she still looks amazing. Like, don't get me wrong, but calm down.
Speaking of calm down, backstage, Vince Russo asks Scott Steiner for help, and Steiner just screams at him.
Because he's in the middle of making out with his ladies.
Was he making out?
Yeah. Well, he was, like, leaning in to make out, it felt. If you got interrupted when you were about to make the going in for the kill of a threesome, and some guy comes up and is like, hey, start working, you wouldn't be mad?
Well, Russo says, you gotta help me. And Steiner's like, I gots to do nothing.
I gots to be with these ladies what I gots to do.
He then threatens Russo, and back from commercial, Russo has seemingly struck a deal with Tank Abbott, of all people.
Ugh.
Elsewhere backstage, Mean Gene is with Jeff Jarrett. He's like, you gonna make fun of me again? I don't know, I might.
Jurassic slap ass.
Jarrett says he'll win tonight because he's the chosen one, and then calls Gene a Jurassic slap ass. Jesus Christ, you have nothing new, do you?
Nope.
Scott Steiner then comes out to the ring with the ladies. And Emily, for the first time in a while, we get it.
We get the best at sex promo.
And you know what? You're going to get it too right now.
Hell yeah.
No, last night at Slamboree, I wrestled one of the misfits who now calls himself Hugh G-rection. And after I beat the hell out of him, I took my two freaks back to the hotel and I found myself one. Now my freaks have always told me size does matter, and I'm the biggest of them all. So as I took my two ladies up to the mountaintop, and they found Nirvana, and just as they're about to reach the summit, they both said to me, oh God, oh God, and they called me the daddy. That's the big bad booty daddy.
He then goes on to say that he's a genetic freak and Booker T is nothing but an amoeba. He's got no backbone. You're telling me this man is not the best promo we've had on the show?
Oh, he 100% is. Now, no, with like the with the option of hindsight, yes.
I was right?
Current day, he's the best promo.
All of a sudden, Tank Abbott then sneaks up behind Steiner, low blows him, and then knocks him out.
We do get almost immediate Goldberg chance after this, too.
Not much, though. It was like...
They're still there. They're prominent.
A little bit, and then it's like, eh, we're not going to get him here, are we?
No, he's not coming here.
Yeah, so he knocks out Steiner. We are not done with these two tonight. Like, this feels like it should be, cool, that's where we're at.
Yeah, if they were pushing Tank correctly.
Or just telling a story correctly.
That, too.
We then get Mean Gene here with Sting. Sting shouts and says the title being in the line is really good for him. And said Eric Bischoff and Russo have finally made a mistake putting the title on the line.
Why is Sting screaming?
Sting then shows his bat and tells Jeff Jarrett to bring his guitar. As in like, okay, you know, even playing field. It's showtime, folks.
I just don't know why he screamed through all of this. This is not Surfer Sting. Why does Scorpion Sting scream?
Because he either screams or doesn't talk. There's not an in between.
I would prefer him to not talk. He was more menacing when he didn't talk.
Let's go to our match that could have used some explaining going in. It is either a 3-on-1 team match or it's a 4-way match, but it's elimination regardless. It is, I'll just list the teams. I don't know where the verses are.
I called it a 4-corner match.
It is Harlem Heat 2000, the Harris Boys, the Mamalukes, and Chronic. Maybe for the tag team titles? It's very unclear if Chronic are actually the tag champs or not.
But they come out with the belts, and they're kind of lauded as the champs.
Yeah. Or they counted their own pin. And so it's like, that shouldn't count. And
correct.
Admittedly, I do have to admit, I got faked out by Harlem Heat's theme song. I heard Booker's theme, and I was like,
oh. You forgot.
But yeah, so Chronic might be the champions now. The Buff franchise come out as everyone brawls.
So they're part of the match? But like,
No, they go over to commentary. However, their whole goal here is to get the belts back.
Yes.
The belts are sitting on the apron next to the fucking ramp. And they go, oh, let's go to commentary.
Just gotta watch the match.
Remember that.
Nick won't forget it.
You know what I realized we were saying before? I don't have a best bit, worst bit MVP. I realize I do.
I definitely have... I have my worst bit and my best bit already.
We then cut away to Scott Steiner just throwing some chairs around backstage.
It's like the most random cutaway. For why?
Everyone keeps brawling. Some random song plays for about 2 seconds. The three other teams attack Chronic, but argue when it's time to eliminate them. So, but it's an elimination match.
Meanwhile, the French fries are fucking intolerable on commentary.
Oh, I was trying to get rid of the match.
They are insufferable.
I wrote, holy shit, this is nothing. Big T just goes up the ramp for some reason. He doesn't do anything up there.
He just doesn't want to be here anymore. Can you blame him?
Brian Adams pins Vito. Brian Clark pins a Harris boy. So both those teams are out. The Buff franchise then get in the ring but get cleared. Same with Big Cass or Cash. Stevie Ray then just like blatantly hits Big T with a slapjack, which might have been supposed to be an accident.
But he like sells it as if it's Big T's fault.
Yes.
Like it was Big T's fault somehow that he got hit by the cookie sheet.
Chronic then...
Or was it a chair?
No, it was slapjack.
Oh, sorry. Who cares?
Chronic then hits High Times on Big T and pins him, but the Buff franchise is taking the belts. Scott Steiner comes out and belly-to-belly's Big Cass on the way manages to knock down... the Buff franchise.
This was so confusing. Like, I had to have you explain this to me.
Because Steiner then grabs a mic and calls out Tank Abbott.
Chronic, so the match no longer matters.
Chronic grabs their belts since Steiner knocked out the Buff franchise. And Steiner then says he's going nowhere and Vince Russo's show is over. Steiner grabs a chair and tells Abbott to stop gumming Russo in the back and takes a seat.
What?
Then we see Tank Abbott warning Doug Dillinger to do something right, and then we go to commercial.
What the fuck just happened?
So yeah, I don't know who the hell the tag champions.
I think still Chronic?
But they kind of were the champions to begin with.
Yeah, I think it stayed that way.
Can I add a weirder element to this? This is the final appearance of Harlem Heat 2000 on the podcast.
Good.
Fully break up on Thunder, but...
They lived a little too
long. We will see Stevie Ray a couple times. Big T... gone.
Good. Cash?
Probably gone.
Good.
I don't know about J Biggs. No mention of him.
Gone.
Yeah.
Good. They were nothing. The second they debuted, we're like, okay, they're on the clock. Get him out of here.
Big T doesn't get released until, I think, mid-June. So we have a little longer before Booker gets his music back. Because apparently once they release him, they're like, yeah, he's Booker T again, and here's your music.
That was a stupid, stupid storyline. As this was a stupid, stupid match. What the fuck happened here?
Well, let's add more to the chaos. Goldberg's music hits. We cut backstage, and it's Tank Abbott doing the Goldberg entrance. He gets the initial pyro, but none on, like, the arm movements, so it's super lame.
Oh, my God. So we talked about earlier how Chuck Palumbo just does not believe the words that are coming out of his mouth. Tank does not believe the actions that are being forced upon him. He does not want to do this entrance. He doesn't want to do this gimmick. He does not believe in the feud that they are setting him up for. And it's so obvious. And if it wasn't obvious before, it is incredibly obvious in this entrance.
Steiner belly-to-belly's Abbott, and they trade strikes. Another belly-to-belly. Steiner then chokes out Abbott until Rick Steiner returns. He pulls Scott off the tank, trying to reason with him. And then Rick turns on Scott, and the two beat him down.
Cool.
Tank knocks out Scott. Rick motions for the camera to cut closer for a little promo, and then we just cut to Vince Russo talking mess backstage.
It was like as Rick Steiner was like taking a breath in to start talking when they cut away. He had something to say. He was ready, and they were like, nah, fuck you.
Yeah. Russo tells someone else to stand by for Liz's match. So, admittedly, Tank Abbott and Rick Steiner were aligned when Tank first showed up, but that was a while ago. I am liking Scott Steiner as a babyface still.
I like Scott Steiner. He has turned on me. I like him a little bit. Tank Abbott will forever be the worst thing to ever happen to this company. Yeah. Y'all thought it was David Arquette that ruined this industry? Tank Abbott.
We then go to Elizabeth versus Daphne. Liz comes out in Spike Dudley attire for some reason.
Yeah, she's looking like a lost Dudley sister.
Daphne comes out in a Liz will die tank top.
I want this tank top. If somebody can find this or make this for me, I want this. I will never wear this tank top outside the house, obviously, but oh my God, I want this tank top. I want it.
Liz slaps Daphne and hits two hair snapmares. Medusa then comes in and just attacks, quote unquote, Liz for the DQ. They stare at each other until Mona comes out and makes the save.
Medusa where the gets hell has Mona been?
Medusa gets the advantage, so Liz hits a chair shot on Medusa. R&B security brings Liz to the back.
This is where it turns into an entirely different thing.
Yes. And Emily, hate to tell you, this is the final appearance of Mona on the podcast.
No! What?
She'll wrestle like next week, I think on Thunder or Saturday night. And then she doesn't get released like August. But
and then
yeah,
she goes
this
to WWF.
Yeah, I guess I should say, she never wrestles a match. I can't rule out she randomly appears, but by all accounts, she's got nothing else match-wise.
Mona!
So this match, they've been setting up for, I think, about a calendar year.
Ugh.
They never do. They never do Mona versus Medusa.
Damn.
But yeah, she's on to much better things. I mean, look, at the end of the day, she is still super green here. She goes to WWF and then immediately goes like into training for a little bit. And
she becomes Mighty Molly.
She's Molly Holly first because she gets paired
with... But she re-debuts as Mighty Molly and then that's what she goes into the Hall of Fame as, right?
I think she's in as Molly Holly, but I think about her coming in as being cousins with Crash and Bob.
I guess that's true.
Because they do the whole Romeo and Juliet story with her and Spike.
Yeah.
One of very few women to get her head shaved bald on WWE TV.
Oh, yeah. She did get shaved.
I think it's like her and Serena, I want to say.
Hmm.
Molly went, I want to get on WrestleMania. I will literally have my head shaved bald if you put us on WrestleMania. And they went, okay.
Good for her. Good for her. Yeah. Do what you got to do. Being a woman in this industry is hard.
We then get Kevin Nash and Hulk Hogan heading towards the ring for their street fight.
Don't get me started.
It is Team Former NWO versus the Filthy Animals. By the way, by Team Former NWO, I mean Kevin Nash comes out in NWO tank top.
I can't do it.
I'm unsure who is actually legal in this match.
Who the fuck cares?
But they come out with Torrey Wilson and Mike Awesome. So it is 4-on-2 to start. The faces immediately overcome the numbers game. Juventud Guerrera comes out, joins commentary. Oh, he's been gone for a little while.
Yeah, that was nice to see him come back. I don't know. I kind of missed him.
Everyone is brawling until the heels bail. Hoovy hits a missile dropkick on Nash, and the heels manage to lure Hogan to the back. Horace distracts them for a second, but they manage to throw Hulk Hogan in the trunk of a car. Horace tries to chase them, but the car peels out. Back in the ring, Kevin Nash hits a jackknife on Hoovy, and his music just plays. Like, oh, yep, I guess they won?
Great question. What the fuck? Yeah. I can't do this anymore, man. What was this?
I did give you some life, though, because I showed you Kevin Nash on Thunder.
Yes. We'll talk about Thunder in a minute. But, like, I'm tired of these matches where it's, like, nothing. It's all these people, and you just know that they're only on this show for a paycheck, and it's like, oh, we're here, hello, done.
Yeah, it's look I'm how much better I am than these it. Other people.
I'm tired of it. Yeah. And we get Kevin Nash doing this in WCW. We're also getting it in TNA. So all I see of Kevin Nash is him being a fucking prick.
And he's meant to be a face in both companies.
Yeah, that's not working, brother. Oh, man. See, here's the problem. Like, I've said this before. I said it before Scott Hall died. If I ever fucking get the opportunity to meet Kevin Nash in a local wrestling meet and greet or something, I don't know what I'm going to say to that man.
You turned positive on him for a little while.
I did turn positive, and now we're back, baby. I don't know what I'm going to say to this man.
So, Emily, do you want to tell us about Thunder?
Do I?
After your hard day, you needed this. I'm like,
listen, I had a shitty day at work. I come home, Nick greets me with a glass of wine, and Thunder is on the television. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. And he's like, no, it'll help. I don't trust that sentence usually.
This is a wild segment because it starts with a like 4-on-1 handicap match with the Filthy Animals versus Horace Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
Hulk Hogan comes out to make the save, makes the save, chases Eric Bischoff to the back, and then just the beatdown
just like resumes. Nothing happened.
So Kevin Nash then comes out.
Sure he did.
I feel like more to beat down the Filthy Animals than to make the save.
I guess.
And then the Filthy Animals bail and like cower like a bunch of little bitches. Mm-hmm. Like, this is out of fucking Kevin Nash's fan fiction almost. Vince Russo comes out, and I swear I've not heard this promo, but I fucking wrote this promo two episodes ago of, tell me about Vinny Vegas, tell me about Oz, you were nothing without me. I'm like, holy shit, I just know how Vince Russo's brain works at this point.
Yeah.
And they go to do the blood drop.
So Kevin Nash is standing the center of the ring. Like, perfectly set in the center of the ring. They go to do the blood drop. It's about 3 feet off to the right. So it drops by the ropes.
Yeah, he just
gets
the front row. You can see them
all. I guess the front row of the crowd doesn't touch Kevin. But the shot of the blood dropping and Kevin Nash just staring up the ramp at Russo, just like,
Hooventude corpses. So he's so bad he's a fucking zombie because he's laughing his ass off.
I thought that he might have been trying to sell it of like, that's what we meant to happen, you fucking loser.
No, dude.
I know. But the way that Kevin Nash is just like staring up at Vince Russo at the top of the ramp is just like, you are such a fucking piece of shit.
Well, so a little bit gets on him at the end, and commentary's trying to be like, oh, they got him.
That's what I thought that Hoovy was also doing. Like, pretend this is exactly what was supposed to happen. Like, continue with the kayfabe. Nothing went wrong. But Kevin's face just says everything.
Yeah.
Like, you fucked up, man. This is... someone's getting fired.
We then go backstage. The Filthy Animals try to leave, but are cut off by a Goldberg monster truck.
Where the fuck
did this come from? This was not teased at all.
When has there ever been a Goldberg monster truck?
Emily, this Goldberg monster truck is stalking Rick Steiner and Tank Abbott. They show up at Thunder, and it creeps up in the distance.
Goldberg never comes back, does he?
He died. But, by the way, the mushroom pulling up is enough for the Filthy Animals to go, oh shit, and just bail from the car.
What?
Just out of nowhere, mushroom just Goldberg right in the
side. I can't do it anymore.
We then get a 1-800-CALL-ATT ad. And as part of this, we randomly get one of the guys wearing the tie-dye NWO shirt from literally a year ago.
Nick, are you really focusing on the tie-dye shirt?
We yes. just had
a Goldberg monster truck. Nothing matters. But nothing is real. Oh, Why are we here?
I should say, we don't see Goldberg once.
Why are we even doing this show? What is the purpose of our addition to the internet? Why are we here?
Well, I know it'll bring you back.
No, it won't.
It's the main event. It's Jeff Jarrett versus Sting for the WWE title.
I don't
But Emily,
think it
what
will.
Do we get during Sting's entrance?
Bird. We get a bird.
Emily, on Thunder. Actually, it's actually today after tonight. Vampiro stole the bird.
Think about the words that you're saying.
He stole the bird, Emily.
About a personified monster truck, and now we're talking about a bird robber.
A vampire. What are we? A vampire bird
a
robber.
A vampire bird robber. What are we fucking doing with our lives?
So on Thunder, they go to do a sit-down interview with Vampiro, and Mike Tenay's like, why are you dressed in character?
In character?
Yes! He says the words in character. And Vampiro's like, oh, he actually, it's a better promo he's cut a lot recently. He's like, I took Steve's bird. Steve, yeah, you know, Steve Borden, the actor. And then he has the bird and is like, you know, Ozzy Osbourne used to bite the heads off a vampire bat? I'm having similar ideas. So Sting comes in and just attacks Vampiro.
Rescues his bird?
Including the line, you live in such darkness. Let's shine some light on that. And like drops a light on Vampiro with that.
I hate it here.
So Sting has saved the bird.
Thank God.
All right. I'll run us through this real quick. Sting starts up tempo, hits Japanese arm drags.
What is the point?
And then a 10-punch spot.
Why are we here?
Jeff Jarrett dodges a Stinger splash, but is clotheslined to the floor. Sting suplexes Jeff Jarrett onto the elevated ramp in kind of a cool spot, but Jarrett dodges a diving splash. They brawl onto the ramp until Sting hits a flying clothesline and both men are back in the ring. Jarrett locks in the figure four, but Sting reverses the pressure and starts a comeback, including multiple Stinger splashes. Sting locks in the Scorpion Deathlock, but Vampiro suddenly cuts a hole in the ring, pulls Sting in, and leaves him covered in blood, which commentary does point out, we saw this a few weeks ago!
We sure did.
Except this time, for some reason, first, we get a fire extinguisher just spraying out of the hole for a little effect.
Fog!
Clearly, they didn't have their smoke machine ready. It's just, psh! Sting is covered in the red.
The red viscous liquid.
Vampiro pulls him out of the hole and Jarrett pins him. DQ?
No, fuck it.
Basically, all of the new blood comes out and then the Wolfpack music hits. Hogan and Nash kill everyone. Jesus Christ. That's it for Nitro. Oh, wait. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
Bill Goldberg's monster truck runs over Tank Abbott's car, which may or may not have Tank Abbott inside. They're unsure of.
Maybe we're lucky and it did.
Thoughts on this match?
What match?
90% Sting until the finish, but thoughts on the show?
What the fuck are we watching, man? This is not wrestling. This is not even fun fab. This is just like, why am I here?
This show was one of those that I was more fine with while we were watching. And upon analyzing, I'm like, wait, what the fuck was this
What
show?
The fuck was this?
I did start cackling at the first Goldberg monster truck, and you were like, Nick, are you okay?
I need you to get your shit together. Because, like, why are you surprised? I'm not surprised. I'm just, like, baffled. Like, which is, I guess, is a synonym for surprised. But whatever. It's not even a shock that we're doing a monster truck bit. It's just, like, somehow overdone. The monster truck bit is overdone in professional wrestling. What a sentence that is. Like, are you really surprised that we're personifying a monster truck? No. But if we put this in any other sport or any other television program, this would be fucking weird. But because it's in professional wrestling, it's like, been there, done that. We've already done this shit.
Emily, you don't have monster truck madness?
I used to. When I was a kid, my dad and I used to love saying Sunday, Sunday, Sunday to each other. I'm over it.
Does it make you feel better or worse that Medusa goes on to drive monster trucks professionally?
I'm so proud of her. I hope she's thriving.
So, Emily, I will give you a little bit of good news. Next up is not a Nitro. It's ECW Hardcore Heaven.
I think I need it. We just came back to Nitro, and I'm already like, fuck this.
Main event is Just Incredible versus Lance Storm.
I like Lance Storm.
Oh, no. Right before that is Jerry Lynn versus Rob Van Dam with Bill Alfonso.
No!
Oh, but Emily, before we move on,
I don't have anything.
You have to. You have to for two of them. What is your best bit, worst bit, and MVP?
My best bit is the fact that it's over. My worst bit is the fact that we watched it. The MVP is me for surviving.
No. No. I don't think this is worth the whole show for what it's worth.
It's not, but I'm just dreading the rest of this run of, like, our time as podcasters. I'm dreading it. I guess my best bit goes to the Scott Steiner promo, because who doesn't love a best at sex promo? What else is there?
Oh, it's the Goldberg monster truck is the best bit.
Oh, fuck that. No, that sets a precedent.
That is the best bit of the show, because it comes out of nowhere. And technically, that is Goldberg's return to this show.
He was never shown. That's not Goldberg.
Who was driving the white
who
Goldberg
was driving? Who was driving the Goldberg truck?
Emily, worst bit?
Fucking four corners or whatever the hell you want to call it, tag match.
Yeah, that is unclear the rules. And where does that stop for you? Does it stop at the whole Tank Abbott Scott Steiner beatdown, or just like once Chronic leave?
That's a good question. I think I would say it goes through the whole beatdown.
Okay, because to me that stops once Chronic leaves, because that it becomes a different segment from that point.
It's so chaotic, and it never actually knows what it is. I think the entirety of it is bad.
There would be a commercial break on the original show.
I don't think that makes it better.
We have the same answer, but just different stop points. And then, Emily, who is your MVP?
I don't know. I'm going to defer to you.
I'm going to go back to back. I'm going Scott Steiner.
Really?
He did well on the show. Tell me someone who did better on the show than him.
The Bird.
No.
The Bird.
Emily, the Bird the did bird nothing. Did.
And he did so well with it.
Emily, you're not allowed to pick the Bird.
You know what? I'm going to give it to David Arquette.
Why? Because he's from Hollywood.
He put in work tonight. And he did an iconic performance. Fuck it.
End scene.
We're done. And that's a wrap.
I didn't think that was going to be so chaotic for you.
This shit sucked. Well, let me go watch Raw. I want to watch the draft.
Well, you can listen to all of our more sane back catalog on everywhere podcasts are found besides SoundCloud.
Including Deezer.
You can follow us on most social media at Butts in the Pod, Facebook, the Butts and Seats Podcast. We have our Patreon. $5 a month gets you about like 13 or 14 episodes at this point. Mm-hmm. Patreon.com/buttsintheseats. Hogan Knows Best is coming up next there. We have all Legends House. Got a bunch of stuff. Go check it out.
We also have all those WrestleMania write-ups that just keep getting longer and longer, so more worth your money, I guess. The most recent one was about 4,000 words, and I couldn't think of anything to trim down. So.
And that's on the No One Opts For $2 tier.
Exactly.
Ugh, Emily, I will put you out of your misery. Any final thoughts?
I'm so done.
Hey, at least ECW's next.
ECW. I am thrilled to watch ECW.
And then we have so many Nitros and a Thunder. Okay. Aren't you hype?
Nope.
Well, I guess that's it then.
That's the end of this podcast. I guess we're never coming back because Emily's not hype.
Yep, sorry. Sorry, guys. It's over. But at the very least, I will thank you for listening.
Pack.